Anyone remember that time I stood here and hit my head against this desk and just said, what am I going to do with these readings? That was my kind of week this week as well. Some weeks we have a problematic scripture reading for the week, which I feel we need to address. Some weeks we have three. Guess what kind of week this is? Actually, that's not really quite the right way to say it. It's worth saying, perhaps some weeks we have scripture readings that we find problematic. And it's worth asking why we find them problematic. So I'll begin. Our reading from Genesis is at the end part of the Joseph story, which began last week. So no, you haven't missed any weeks. This is how our lectionary gives us the story beginning and end. So we get lots of the story left out. There's no Dustin Hoffman in the graduate moment. Mrs. Potiphar, you're trying to seduce me. There's no being thrown in jail and meeting the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker, or whoever it was there. There's no dream interpretations. There's no Pharaoh who's an Elvis impersonator. And there's no prizes for spotting all of my well-outdated cultural references in that last paragraph. So we go straight from Joseph being dumped into a pit and sold into slavery, to Joseph being the second in command of the Egyptian empire and admitting to his brothers it was him all along after some deception on his part, which is a shame because it's a great story, which I'll come back to in a moment. The problematic part is the kind of God this story and its whole story arc seems to portray. The kind of God that will get a young, admittedly rather annoying man, beaten and sold, forced into slavery, thrown into jail despite being innocent, under threat of death, all in order that he can be in the right place at the right time to interpret the strange dreams of a disturbed ruler that goes something like, I was a-wandering along by the banks of the river winds. No, I'm not going to go any further. I did play Pharaoh once in an amateur version of the Joseph. So this is all that he may save, Joseph may save Egypt from famine, then save his own family and set up the story of the Exodus, which is to come soon. But that seems to be a pretty calculating and somewhat cruel God. But I'll come back to that statement earlier. This is a great story, and that's where the problem sets in for some. If we actually looked at this as a actual historical event and a revelation of divine nature, then there's no surprise you're going to get a pretty weird and twisted view of how God works in the world. But if we understand these stories as myths, meaning-making stories that wrestle with issues such as, well, how did the people of Israel end up in Egypt so that they can go on to the Exodus, which is the defining moment of the Hebrew mindset? Or if we ask, how does the divine speak to us? Or how does the divine accompany us through the bad and the good in life? Or what do dreams mean? What's their purpose? If that's how we approach these stories, then we'll realize they are dynamic and multifaceted, context-rooted stories. They're gifts from our forebears in faith for us to find meaning in for our time or to recognize they're not something for us. Or to simply be aware of where our own faith tradition finds its roots and its basis. Then, if we see them in such a dynamic way, they don't become eternal truths or hard and fast revelations of the exact nature of God. Which leads me on to Romans. This caused a fair amount of speculation at Sermon Circle. And if I may, a quick explanation of what Sermon Circle is. For those that don't know, it's a small group of St. John's folk, including a couple who've moved away from the city, who gather on Zoom on Wednesdays at 9:30 for an hour or so, 90 minutes if we get really excited, to discuss the readings for the coming Sunday. Everyone is welcome. It is not a closed group. So if you would like to come and join us on a Wednesday morning, the discussion is always thoughtful and sometimes even helpful for the preacher in the coming week. Email me or Carol Ann if you would like the Zoom link for any Wednesday. Anyway, Romans. We struggled with what the last verse, well, what the whole lead up to it was, but particularly what the last verse said. For God has imprisoned all in disobedience, that he may be merciful to all. Really? Well, firstly, let's remember that Paul's writings and the writings that take Paul's name are, again, dynamic works addressing particular contexts, just like the myths of our Jewish forebears. And the context of this work is that Paul is desperately trying to express how his Jewish siblings are still at the heart of God's revelation of God's self to the world, even if they have not accepted Jesus as Messiah. Paul, who is an exceptional theologian, is working through how this might be possible. And in chapters 9 through 11 of the book of Romans, he offers a kind of masterclass in doing theology out loud. And he doesn't always get it spot on. It develops as he writes, or probably spoke it out loud and it was written down. Paul and other writers of the letters develop their thoughts, sometimes even within the one piece of work, certainly through the different books of our New Testament. They are not static, they are not perfect, nor are all parts applicable to the world that we live in. When we see our scriptures as static, immutable documents, we lose the many layers and the depth that there is within our Bibles. We pickle these timeless truths in a literalist or moralist aspic, and we don't dig deep, asking what the contexts are for the writers. What did they mean? What might it mean for us now? And even more, how can the deepest truths of love, compassion, grace, justice, healing, and wholeness, which are at the heart of our scriptures, be lived out today? When the scriptures are revered in such a way as to make them impervious to challenge or question, then we do a disservice to the generations of storytellers, writers, editors, interpreters, and sharers who curated and shaped this exciting, dynamic, and timeless book we call the Bible. We challenge our scriptures, and they should challenge us. They challenge us to ask, what is the loving response to this in every situation, and then to answer and act accordingly. They challenge us to speak up for justice. They challenge us to work for the fullness of life that Jesus spoke of and that the Hebrew writers called shalom. But we need to question them, just as we're doing here today. And so we come to our final reading, the gospel passage, which could be more problematic, again, if we didn't recognize that this is dynamic and rooted in context, based in a particular culture and time. Jesus, for instance, as the passage opens today, is talking about a particular approach to the observance of religious law and ritual. Not to encourage dropping the Jewish law, so that when he speaks of that which defiles a person, not being that which goes into the mouth, but that which comes out of the mouth, he's not advocating doing away with the eating observances of the Jews, but going deeper into the law, looking at the reasons behind the law, which ultimately are about how we relate to one another, speaking and living with respect and compassion, and how we take care of ourselves in watching what we eat and drink, as well as committing ourselves to loving God with heart and mind. In this approach, he echoes the prophet Jeremiah, where Jeremiah says that God will replace hearts of stone which are concerned only with blind observance of laws with hearts of flesh, which root all their observance in love and compassion. This is not wiping out the old to replace it with something different, but questioning the reasons people may make these observances and follow this path. It's putting the heart back into faith. And then we have Jesus' somewhat shocking reaction to a Canaanite woman, a non-Jew in today's story. And I read part of Jason McKinney, who was a guest here a few weeks ago, I read part of his sermon today, where he says, Jesus was probably really tired and runs off to Tyre and Sidon. And what happens when we're tired? We go to our default, often to the unconscious biases that we hold. There, it's the kind of time when we start talking about those people. We us and them, and withdraw into ourselves. So Jesus gives an unthought out, biased, unconscious view of the world. not offering any observation on the woman's place as an outsider, placed at the bottom of the pile by society, by her culture's status, her widowhood, and only having a female child. Jesus shows his own cultural bias when he refers to her in popular idiom as a dog. And she pushes back. And he realizes his need to reassess his approach. Indeed, he is reminded of, I'm sure, encounters that have taken place in other parts of the story. That his calling is not just to reach out to the lost sheep of Israel. We see elsewhere in other encounters the change when Jesus looks beyond only the Jewish people, encountering Roman centurions, outsiders and colonizers, challenging, healing, and listening. Jesus' mission matures and becomes more expansive, and that is our gospel calling, that we, as Jesus reminds us in today's gospel, just before his encounter with the bold Canaanite woman, that we weed out, with God's help, within ourselves, within our communities, anything which prevents us truly seeing the worth of all people and living as God intends us to, in love and justice. As our scriptures challenge us, we challenge them, and we learn together. Pray God it may be so. Thanks be to God.